From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, this is Eastern Standard. Hello, I'm John Hingsbergen. And even though we are a few days from Earth Day, events surrounding it begin as early as tomorrow with the Bluegrass Green Source holding a downtown trash bash tomorrow. We'll talk about other events for Earth Day. We'll talk about sustainability, preservation, preservation of lands, as well as natural resources in our show today. What about going green? Topics that all fall within the range of a conversation about Earth Day. We encourage you, our listeners, to be part of the conversation. We'll introduce our guests here in just a moment, but I will tell you that if you have a question, a comment, or a personal story related to Earth Day, feel free to send us an email to wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at WEKUEST, and then you'll be able to send us a direct message that we can use on the air. Post on our Facebook page. We're keeping an eye on that this morning. And, of course, you can call 800-621-8890 to be part of this week's Eastern Standard. And we have a full house of guests this morning, so I want to start introducing them, and we'll hear a little bit about what each of them does. First up, Jim Embry. Jim has been here before on another topic a few months ago, but he is involved with the Sustainable Communities Network, which he actually founded.
Yes,
in,
sir.
In 2006, as a native, or not? Are you a native? But you're a resident of Richmond right now.
Born in Richmond.
Okay,
so a few years ago.
A native and returning resident to the Richmond area, and you operate a farm.
Yes.
And your interests and your issues today are concerning what, sustainable farming? And
well, you know, our issues have to do with how do we promote sustainable living and all the aspects of it. We feel that the foundation of a sustainable community is based around a local food system and what that means in terms of supporting local farmers, natural habitats, biodiversity, water quality, things like that.
Okay, so local food, farmers markets, topics of that type. Listeners want to talk about that. You might want to get involved and engage Jim in conversation this morning. Also with us, we have Amy Soner. Amy is the executive director of Bluegrass Green Source. Amy, thanks for being with us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Bluegrass Green Source, with a statewide presence, is a nonprofit organization providing education and resources to schools, community groups, business, local government on green initiatives. I guess Earth Day is a big deal for you all.
Absolutely. We try and really help people understand that there's little small things that they can do, small behavior changes that can actually have a really big impact in our environment.
So we'll talk about those small things, and I'm sure
Absolutely.
You have a list that you can share
Absolutely.
With us and some tips. At some point during the show, I think we'd like to toss out some suggestions for what listeners can do for Earth Day. Also with us is Hugh Archer. Hugh is executive director of the Kentucky Natural Lands Trust, an organization founded in 1995 with the aim of restoring and protecting Kentucky's remaining natural wild lands. Hugh and his colleague Mark Evans, who will join us also during the program, handed me this excellent picture, image, spread, centerfold, I guess it looks like, of the Pine Mountain Wildlife Corridor. Hugh, this is what you all do, is preserve lands and what bring them back to their natural state?
Many environmental groups raise some money and do a little lobbying and litigating. But we're buying land. It's the expensive route, but it works. It works better than regulations. We've identified some of the largest forest blocks remaining in the state, the most intact watersheds. And when those come together and things can move north and south with climate change, it becomes a migratory corridor. We've tried to focus on the most effective places we could purchase conservation land, connecting existing blocks of forest and public lands. Pine Mountain in particular, over 110 known rare species, one of the largest intact ecological areas left in the state.
Wow, very interesting. And I just realizing this morning as I met you that our listeners who hear the station on 90.1 out of Pineville are hearing from a transmitter right there on the top of Pine Mountain in that region.
Right.
So it all kind of comes together, and we're talking Earth Day today. We're talking sustainability, going green, and related topics. Again, feel free to get on the line and interact with our guests at 800-621-8880. 8890. Send an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Okay, folks, Earth Day. Let's talk about what Earth Day means to you. It's not a school essay project, but I remember, 1970, April 22nd. It's been April 22nd, I guess, every year. And I remember a lot of excitement and interest. And then I feel like it kind of went away. Didn't Earth Day disappear, and all of a sudden it's back with us?
I would submit that the challenge, John, is like to figure out how we can celebrate Earth Day every day. It was a wonderful idea almost 40-some-odd years ago on the part of different individuals to create what's called Earth Day as a way for us to focus this one day a year on how we could live more sustainably. But now the challenge is that the condition of the ecosystem, whether it's the questions of Pine Mountain, whether it's the conditions of the water quality in Richmond or in Lexington, or the condition of local food, requires us to think about the Earth every day the same way she thinks about us every day. Every day that we breathe and drink water and eat food, the Earth is nurturing us and giving us the life essentials. So we must do the same thing in return for the Earth.
And I would like to echo Jim's comments, because I think that that's exactly true. And Earth Day every day has been a mantra for a few years now, which I really appreciate. And I know that in Kentucky, Earth Month is celebrated. There are many, many activities all month of April, which is great. But I also, just to add to what Jim said, I'd like to make sure that people understand that there are small things that you can do, and you don't have to change your whole lifestyle to honor the Earth, to, you know, to go along with what Jim said. Even things like picking up after your pet can actually make a big difference if you live in an urban area with lots of dogs and things.
I was on the streets in 1970. Remember, the original concept was decennial, 1970, 80, 90. So the bigger Earth Day events are then. But it has become an annual day for celebration and for programs and for, like this radio show, it gives us a little focus. I think what's really important, though, is it started out with us kids that wanted to do the right thing, and we didn't have any money, and we didn't have any political authority much, and Earth Day was a nice attention grabber. But today, the ecology, the environment is the economy. And if Earth Day's fading, it's actually the movement is growing. Now we've got corporations, we've got politicians that are understanding that the climate change, the balance of water, food, and other necessities. A lot of these things we've gotten for free, and now we've got to work with cost avoidance by setting up large forest blocks, clean water, so we don't have to pay to keep it.
You're involved in buying this land and setting aside these large forest blocks. Where does that money come from? How do you end up purchasing parts, and who are you buying it from?
We work with five and more state partners: State Fish and Wildlife, Nature Preserves Commission, Wild Rivers, Forestry, and Parks. So sometimes we borrow the money, buy the land, roll it over to the state agencies when we can help them get a grant to buy it back. We hold land that we purchase. 85% of our operating money comes from individuals in Kentucky. Kentucky's pretty thin on foundations. It's pretty thin on corporate giving. And we are a mineral resources removal-based economy for 200 years. There's a lot of inertia against anything but private property ownership. So it's an uphill fight here in Kentucky. We own less of our own state than all the other states in the Southeast for public purposes.
And what then are the purposes of that property once it becomes reestablished, I guess, as a wildland? Can people hunt on it? Can they camp on it and fish and do outdoor activities?
The tourism angle and aspects of our conservation work is very significant, including the Great Eastern Trail, which will bisect Tennessee. They've built that part. We're going to have the trail running all the way down Pine Mountain, going from New York to Florida, bigger than the Appalachian Trail. So there's a tourism concept to everything we're doing. Hunting, generally game species are not a problem. There are too many of them. They live on the edges. We have too many edges. We're not against hunting at all. We just don't like it when they trespass with ATVs in the wrong place and wipe out the little rare fish that nobody thinks of as anything but bait.
Well, that's Hugh Archer you're hearing. He's executive director of the Kentucky Natural Lands Trust, and Amy Soner of Bluegrass Green Source. Let's talk about some of those small things, those little things that you feel we can all do to observe Earth Day and help to preserve our planet.
Sure. Well, again, Earth Day should be every day, but since we're thinking about it now, this is a great opportunity to get out and do something. And so one of the things that Bluegrass Green Source has done is, like you mentioned at the top of the show, is partner with the Downtown Lexington Corporation in Lexington for the Trash Bash tomorrow, which is actually going to be from 12 to 4. So if people want to get out and pick up trash, that's a great place to do it. If you don't live in Lexington, but you live in either Lancaster, Harrodsburg, Winchester, Stanford, Irvine, or Danville, we are doing a Main Street clean sweep on Earth Day next Tuesday, and that's from 11:30 to 1:30, and you get a t-shirt. If you don't want to participate or can't participate in any of those specific things, there are many things that you can do, and this is a really wonderful opportunity. Everything from installing a rain barrel. This is something that we did, you know, centuries ago. We had barrels to collect water off of our roofs or just rainwater, and it's sort of become there's a resurgence in that, and that's a wonderful way to keep water on your property. Every drop of water that lands on the ground carries with it, it goes to a nearby stream and can carry pollutants. So if you can attach a rain barrel, you can hold that water on your property, use it to water your plants, or just let it soak in. So that's one good way to participate.
Wow, I know there are such things as, are they call these rain gardens? Is that also serve that similar purpose?
Absolutely. Rain gardens are, I think, a fascinating thing, and they're beautiful and can be really useful. We suggest native plants. You plant a garden in a depression in the path of water, and the idea is that it is not a wetland. Wetlands keep water for a long time. Rain gardens are designed to drain the water within 24 hours, so first of all, it's not a mosquito problem, but the idea is that you hold water on your property. So you plant a rain garden in a depression, hold the water for 24 hours, and let it soak into the ground, and the soil can actually filter a lot of the pollutants that have come off of your roof or things like that.
All right, we're going to take our first break for this week's Eastern Standard as we invite our listeners to get on board. I know we do have a caller waiting on the line patiently, and we'll try to get to Nigel from Lexington in just a few minutes. We'll encourage you, if you have a question, a comment, a personal story about Earth Day, about your efforts at trying to become green, give us a call at 800-621-8890. Write to us, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. The Twitter is at WEKUEST. We're also on Facebook, the WEKU page on Facebook. That phone number again, 800-621-8890. We're going to come back and talk to the farmer in a moment here as well as we discuss Earth Day on Eastern Standard on WEKU. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. I'm John Hingsbergen with a room full of guests as we discuss Earth Day and related topics. We're interested in your comments, your stories, your questions about Earth Day, preserving the environment, going green, preserving wildlands in Kentucky. We're hearing some interesting things from the Kentucky Natural Land Trust, it's called. Hugh Archer, we heard from a few moments ago. Mark Evans is now joining us. Mark, you're on the board of the Natural Land Trust?
That's right. Yeah, I'm on the board right now. I'm also a ecologist for the state of Kentucky for many years and involved in conservation for decades here.
Okay, when we get to the phone here in just a moment, this may be a question for Mark from Nigel from Lexington. Jim Embry is with us as the founder of the Sustainable Communities Network, with a belief that local and school community gardens are a good way to teach sustainability. As we talk about these tips that Amy was mentioning, what is the role of community gardens?
Let me, if I can, John, throw out a wonderful idea for anyone that can do this. My birthday is in April. It's the 23rd, actually. And I'm having a birthday party on the 26th. It's called Birthdays and Butterflies. I'm inviting friends and families to come out to our farm, okay? And work on different projects. One of them is creating a monarch butterfly way station. We'll have kids and adults come out, learn how to plant milkweeds and other kind of perennials to establish natural habitats for pollinators like butterflies, whether it's bees or bats or whatever else. We're also going to give each family a little packet of seeds where they can go home to their own home, their school, their house of worship, and plant these seeds to create habitats for pollinators. We're going to give each family as well a little kit to create their own worm composting bin. I have it on the farm, a huge worm compost bin. We're going to send people home with red wigglers and teach them how to do more composting, which is also a critical element that was talked about by Amy Hill a while ago about small things you can do. Everyone ought to be composting. And then at nighttime, we're going to have a big fire. People are going to be camping out. And we're going to take time to look at the stars. Because not only is it Earth Day, it's also a need for us to think about the other parts of the universe that make the Earth where it is so beautiful. So, but yeah, we work on community gardening, whether they are in schools. We also submit that each house of worship ought to have a garden of eating, as we call it. Oh. We create gardens in parks. And we think that the best way to teach sustainable living, eco-literacy, is in a garden. We work with kids who are 2, 3 years old. They can't read or write, but they can learn about systems thinking, how to work together, and not fear, you know, worms and bugs and things like that. And they can begin to learn at that young age how to live more sustainably.
Wow. What does Earth Day mean to you? You're invited to get on board and be part of today's Eastern Standard. Send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Give us a call at 800-621-8890. Let's go ahead and talk to Nigel from Lexington. Nigel, I understand you have a very specific question for our guests. Go right ahead. Thanks for waiting.
I do. Thanks for taking my call. My question was for Hugh. I was asking if he could speak a little bit about any of the rare herpetofauna or reptiles and amphibians found in the Pine Mountain area.
Well, Hugh has stepped away from the microphone, but Mark Evans is an ecologist and I'm sure has an answer for you.
Well, yeah, that's a great question. Pine Mountain has many rare species, over 100 rare and endangered species that are on the state list here, several federally endangered species. Regarding the herpetofauna, there is a number of rare salamanders on the mountain and some snakes also. We see lots of snakes when we're up there in the mountains, and we're working to protect, you know, all of these species, not just the herps, but the plants and the mammals and fishes. So, you know, Pine Mountain is a wonderful place to go to look for wildlife and do birding. A lot of people go there for birding. It's, you know, it's a hot spot in Kentucky for wildlife conservation.
Nigel?
Yes, that answered my question. And I was wondering if they had seen any, or if he had seen any northern pine snakes there, or if there had been any sightings in recent years.
Well, you know, I can't answer that directly. I'm a botanist, and I hang out with a lot of herpetologists. Now, I will ask about most recent sightings or distribution of the pine snake. Have you seen the pine snake on the mountain?
No, I know they are seen historically in southeast Kentucky, but I haven't heard or read of any recent sightings.
Well, I will look into that, and we'll let you know.
All right, Nigel, thank you so much.
Thanks for my call.
Thanks for calling. This is Eastern Standard. 800-621-8890 is our number. Folks, why do we care about snakes and worms and butterflies? We can't eat any of these. How is it good for us that we care for those creatures?
Well, that's a great question. Let me take it real quick here for part of it anyway, is that, you know, we're all part of the planet. All species are related. What hurts other species ends up hurting us. We take care of the planet. We protect natural areas. We protect the biological diversity of the planet. It's benefiting humans. We may not eat them directly, though in some countries we do. But otherwise, we have to take care of the planet. We have to look at it holistically, not whether that specific species, you know, feeds a human or not. It all is tied together, and it's all very important.
Absolutely. You know, John, spiritual teachings and quantum thinking says that we're all interconnected. People who, Native Americans, said these are all our relations, whether they are the rock people, the plant people, the animal people, the water people, the air people. We are all related. We're all family. So it behooves us as human beings, because we rely on those elements of life more than they rely upon us. So it behooves us to be the stewards, protectors, nurturers, lovers of all these species.
Well, I mean, we have holes in the ozone. We have the air to a great extent polluted, and it seems like it's not turning around. We've strip mined a lot of property and destroyed lots of places on this earth and done tons and tons of other damage. Is all of this repairable? Can it be reversed? Can the earth be repaired from the damage that humans have done to it?
I think that if you don't think it can, you might as well just sit down.
Give it up.
Yeah. I think that everything can, and I think that there's lots of things we can do. And sometimes the people that we encounter don't like to hear the doomsdayer. One of the things that we at Bluegrass Greensource really try and do is think about the positive and really talk about what it is that we can do and how we can affect change, which we can. And there's lots of things we can do nationally. There's lots of things we can do globally. But also, importantly, there's lots of things we can do in your backyard.
800-621-8890 is our number. Let's talk to Alice. This is Alice Jones, the Director of Sustainability at EKU. Alice, and you've got a great idea of maybe sharing an event with us or telling us about what's going on the EKU campus.
Sure. Well, first I wanted to say hello to Amy and Q. I'm both the Director of EKU's Office of Sustainability, which is charged with looking at sustainability through all of campus operations, and then also our Environmental Sustainability and Stewardship Minor Program, which is the academic program promoting sustainability and stewardship. And actually, this is now the 14th year that EKU has celebrated Earth Days in the Cumberlands through the entire month of April. All of our events, a variety of events, we've done an invasive species removal out at Elmwood. We had students that went and helped work on an Appalachian Regional Reforestation Initiative replanting project on an old strip mine in eastern Kentucky. At the beginning of the month, we have a river cleanup, actually two cleanups coming up this Saturday. There's a group of honor students who are going to work to clean up Tate's Creek here in Madison County, and then we're working with the Kentucky Riverkeeper to do a Kentucky River Sweep on the 26th. And actually, our students have been doing a way-to-waste event where we've done two meals now and getting ready to do a third meal on our, just to raise awareness of food waste in our campus dining facility. So I encourage people to go to green.eku.edu, which is kind of our main head post for sustainability and green initiatives here on campus, and also outreach activities, as well as the minor program.
Well, Alice, this sounds very exciting, but some of us of a certain age who remember a lot of enthusiasm for the environment 44 years ago when Earth Day started and so forth, get a sense that maybe there's not as much interest in such matters today. How do college students look at environmental issues today? Do you feel like there's an excitement about caring for the earth among students?
Well, I think that they definitely see it as an important issue, and I really think that they are very, very concerned about it. They see it as particularly things like climate change and loss of biodiversity as things that will directly impact and affect them within their working lifetimes. They're seeing 30 years down the road that there's going to be not only species loss, but there could be changes in the economy, changes in their ability to simply get access to good food, those sorts of things, within their career lifetimes. What I hear from students, though, is they feel somewhat disconnected from the large-scale factors or systems that are causing those losses, and they feel that they don't know how to get involved. And, you know, Hugh was saying earlier that, you know, Earth Days kind of started from this group of kids that were saying they didn't have a lot of political power or a lot of impact, wanting to make a statement and to at least raise awareness. And I get a lot of the same sentiments from today's students. They're looking at how can they do things in their own life, but then really it seems like a major hurdle, which has been for many years, to then take that next step and say, how do we make this something that affects the economy more broadly, the political system more broadly, and that's kind of the disconnect and one thing that I try to work with students and that our program tries to work with students to take that personal passion and show them that, yes, in fact, you can make a difference and you can't, there are ways to be part of the process in this larger scale.
And Alice, it's good to hear from you. We work very closely with you and EKU. Bluegrass Green Source also works very closely with over 230 K-12 schools in Central Kentucky.
Absolutely.
And one of the things that we notice and that I notice specifically is that the kids are already doing things that we had to learn when we were in school, like recycling and water conservation and things like that. They already know. So some of the disconnect you might see is not that people aren't as interested, just their shift in what they're interested in. Because again, it's just a standard. A lot of the things that we think of as really important are just a standard for the kids growing up.
Alice Jones.
Absolutely.
Alice, thanks for being a part of our show today. green.eku.edu is the web address you gave us, and we'll put that out there again for our listeners. Thanks for being part of the show. This is Eastern Standard. We invite you to call 800-621-8890 with a question, a comment, a personal story. Send us a tweet. We're picking up some Twitter followers as we speak this morning at WEKUEST, and you can send us a direct message if you follow us. Post on our Facebook page. Send us an email, WEKUEasternstandard@gmail.com. And Amy, following the comments from Alice about college students, so you feel that even young children, how young is too young to teach children about the environment?
Absolutely not at any age, honestly. My oldest daughter is now 7, but when she was in preschool, Bluegrass Green Source came into her preschool and talked to her. It might help that I'm her mother as well, but she was obsessed with littering and would stare at people who smoked in their cars and would tell me immediately when that person put their cigarette out on, threw it out the window, because we have a reporting hotline, so if you see someone litter, you can call our phone number and report it. And so she would demand at 4 years old that I call my office so that we could report the litter bug. So no age is too young.
I mean, but an issue like litter, who's policing that? I mean, I was in a park recently and lovely spring day, and near a picnic table, there was a place was strewn with trash. Someone walked away. I don't know if it was an accident. Maybe a trash can got overturned. But when people don't observe the laws, which we have to have regarding litter, when they are sloppy with their care of refuse and so forth, what can we do about it? Is there even anybody stopping them besides from your daughter?
Yeah, I think that she would yell at everybody if she could. One of the things that I also am on the commission, the Keep Lexington Beautiful Commission, and one of the things that we've done is work with police a lot, because the problem that police have is that there are rapes and murders and things that they think are more important. And so the time it takes to create a litter citation is cumbersome, and then it often gets thrown out in court. And so one of the things the Keep Lexington Beautiful Commission has done has worked with the state legislature, and last year we got a bill passed that says that litter does not have to be criminal. And at first that might seem counterintuitive, but by making litter the policeman gets to choose either a civil citation or a criminal citation, that allows the system to go in a different route if they choose civil. And so this is something we're promoting at various locations. It just got passed, and so no civil citations, to my knowledge, have been issued, but it's one way to make it easier for law enforcement to cite litterers. In addition, I think that somebody who throws out a giant bag of trash either out of their car window or leaves it after a picnic, changing their mindset might be hard. However, I think that cigarette butts, as an example, are something that people do not understand is litter, and that's one thing that education, I believe, can help. And so by reporting it to our phone number, we take them everywhere. We even take them from Hawaii, but we've gotten a few from there. But we have relationships with law enforcement officers, so the law enforcement will send a letter to the owner of the car stating that they had been seen littering, and there's a fine associated with that.
Without debating smoking in general, I've seen smokers take the cigarette apart and just spread the remaining tobacco on the ground. Any problem with that?
Anything that's not water, I have a problem with going on the ground. That is infinitely better than the filter, though, I will say.
Interesting. Jim Embry is, we're talking to Amy Soner of the Bluegrass Green Source, Mark Evans of the Kentucky Natural Lands Trust. Okay, I think I got it right. And Jim Embry, the Sustainable Communities Network.
Let me just add a plug if I can. 3 years ago, I was asked to help write a book that's called Sustainable World Source Book. I contributed several articles as well as photographs. Many photographs are from here in Kentucky, as well, some of the wording in there also describes some of the sustainable activities going on in Kentucky. So I recommend people to go online and do a search for Sustainable World Source Book. But in there, addressing the questions that Alice was raising, in there are a whole host of resources for action. Action on a personal level, what you can do personally, okay? And then what you can do, say, at a campus level, community level, what you can do nationally, and what you can also do internationally. And because we want people to feel connected, but also recognizing that we are now what's called global citizens, and we have to be able to recognize our need to contribute to this whole effort towards living more sustainably at every level. And it's the then it's the task of, say, universities and even K through 12 to give our young people the capacity to understand how they can make a difference at every level, at every level.
Earth Day, environmentalism, going green. These are all topics for today's program on Eastern Standard. 800-621-8890 is our number. We're going to take another short break here. One of the topics I want to get into in the next segment of the show is the role of the economy, or the impact on the economy of environmental efforts and preservation efforts. 800-621-8890 is our number. Send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Our Twitter address, at WEKUEST, and you can post on Facebook. Thanks for being part of this week's Eastern Standard and our discussion and observance of Earth Day a few days early this year. We'll be back in just a few moments on 88.9 and our network of WEKU stations. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. I'm John Hingsbergen with our guests Jim Enbree, Amy Soner, Hugh Archer, and Mark Evans, a full house once again, discussing Earth Day and environmental issues. 800-621-8890 is our phone number if you'd like to get on the line. Actually, here is a question which I guess would go to Hugh Archer. Donna did not stay on the line, but she wants to know if she wants to retain her land in the Pine Mountain Ridge area for sentimental and inheritance reasons, but wants to protect it from being developed, mined, or logged in the future. How can she do that?
One of the easiest tools is to give a conservation easement. Retain ownership, you can transfer it in your family or sell it, but the easement would be enforced by the Kentucky Land Trust or a third-party holder of the easement. And usually you restrict impermeable, no more roads and rooftops, or you reserve a right to build a house. But basically everything you don't reserve stays in its natural state under a conservation easement. It opens up both a federal tax deduction for the value of the gift, and we got through the House, but not the Senate, a state tax credit for easement gifts. We hope that'll move forward in future sessions.
This conservation easement, so if a person issues this, is it revocable by their heirs? Someday, you know, somebody, now they're the owner of the land.
A qualified conservation easement that the IRS will agree grants you a deduction from taxes has got to be perpetual.
Okay, very interesting. Well, I hope that's helpful to Donna. Thank you for calling. Let's talk to Julian from Lexington about the connection between ecology and community. Julian, thanks for being on the air with us. You are on with our guests.
Hello.
Yes, go right ahead, Julian.
Can you hear me?
We can.
Yeah, hi, Mark. How you doing?
He's addressing his comment to Mark. Mark doesn't have headphones on at the moment. Just let me get him. Get
okay.
him on here
Just
we go.
Tell him hi.
Here's
my,
Mark.
My question. my question is this. Wouldn't it be good if all this talk of environmentalism getting together, you know, once a year on Earth Day, was really translated into more of a regular community connection? For example, that panel right there you have is a great panel. Is there a way to have them or people representing their interests together on a monthly or quarterly basis to really focus on problems that can be solved at a local level especially. Sometimes, you know, environmentalism is spread over the whole state or the whole planet. It seems to me what we really need is to have, for example, a central bluegrass core group of people. And we would meet on a monthly, regularly, quarterly basis, and we would talk about general land priorities, kinds of common land, land use issues, land management issues, and some of the details of species. I mean, it seems to me we don't have enough regularity and local focus in how we go about all this stuff. What do you all think?
Well, Julian, this is Amy, and let me mention a couple things that Bluegrass Green Source does. We have, and I believe you might have actually been to one of these, but we have a Green Groups quarterly meeting, and this is maybe not exactly talking about what you're thinking of, but it's similar. It's a time for groups that do anything environmental throughout Central Kentucky to get together and make sure that we are communicating and not stepping on toes and partnering where we should. So that's one way. Green Source also has a weekly article on Kentucky Forward, and so that's more for geared towards the public. Kentucky Forward is an online news source. And then Green Source also does a lot of promotion, not every day or every month, but on various programs, whether it be about water or waste or energy and issues and things like that. And that's more broadcast to the general public. So those are a few options.
Yes, and I would agree, Julian. Great question. Part of our dilemma is that human beings are thinking Newtonianly of things being separate, disconnected, and we must move to thinking what I call quantumly and systems thinking. If we were thinking in systems, then we would be doing the kind of things you're talking about, collaborating on a regular basis, bringing all the different sectors and partners, if you will, to the table to talk about how these things all interrelate. For me, I would say to encourage people to think about the environment isn't over there. Isn't over there at the mountain, over there at the river, but that the environment is your body, the environment is your home, and how can we make our homes more environmentally friendly from using no more toxic chemicals, composting. Even here on the campus of EKU, I would recommend moving away from so much grass, planting perennials, planting much more natural habitats for pollinators on the campus, and moving away, what I call green concrete.
And still maintaining the campus beautiful.
Absolutely. I was in California visiting the Stanford campus, and because of their water issues out there in particular, you go on to the Stanford campus and you see very little grass. You see all these mounds of beautiful flowers and perennials everywhere. We can do the same kind of thing here. But the environment is your body, first of all, okay, and it's your surroundings around your home, your school, your church, and things like that. It's not just the environment that's over there where you have to travel to work on the environment.
Okay, Julian, thank you so much for your call and being part of this week's Eastern Standard. We have a couple of folks waiting on the line, and we'll get back to them in just a few moments, although we do have a line open for you. If you have a question, a comment, a personal story related to Earth Day, feel free to jump on board. 800-621-8890. I promised a few minutes ago we'd talk about the economy. Let's talk about the economy. Much of Kentucky's economy and much of Appalachia's economy is based on coal mining, and that's been the basis of a quality of life for many people for years. That seems to be decreasing in its importance and its economic impact. What is that going to mean for people, and what will switching to alternative sources of energy mean? I note with interest that our reporter Stu Johnson reported that on Tuesday night at the legislature, the final night, I guess there were a couple hours of discussion in the Senate about nuclear energy versus coal. And I recall 30, 40 years ago, there were people not very happy about nuclear energy. Is nuclear even an option? You know, where else can we go in terms of energy and maintaining the economy? It's a big question for Hugh, of course.
Several big questions. In Western Kentucky, there's great concern that we have rules against any further development of nuclear resources and facilities until the waste disposal issue is solved. There were several efforts, and I believe not successful this session, to do away with that restriction. The environmental community definitely split around this issue when we were looking at greenhouse gases versus energy from radioactive-based sources. I, as an attorney, worked on some of the problems in Paducah following the closure of the plant there, and there were comments of, well, if we had $40 million, it'll only be 17,000 more years of problems. So since we've only been around a couple of hundred years as our democratic experiment so far, I think it's a little presumptuous to talk about managing nuclear waste rationally at this point. But greenhouse gases are... We're starting to have their effects of people believing that maybe climate change really is an issue and a big one, and that we're already facing the several hundred years of change, even if we stop everything now. But with fracking and the new sources of natural gas, new sources of natural gas liquids, new sources of energy that are still slightly better than coal, but it turns out maybe not better than coal, with the methane loss at the fracking field added to the burning of gases, you end up with a net greenhouse gas problem that might even exceed the ones we have with coal. So we haven't really solved anything, but what we did was redirect our economic inquiries as to future energy sources away from wind, solar, and alternatives, and back to fossil fuels.
To what extent are wind and solar and alternatives of that type viable, for instance, in Kentucky?
In Kentucky, I'm not sure. In Germany, it works great. It can be done, but it takes political will, and it takes an economic incentives directed at the right types of projects and programs. What we've got here that's renewable is one of the best forests. We were 90% of Kentucky was forest land when Daniel Boone got here. We still have 50% of the state in forest. So renewable energy from wood products and co-burning with wood, but that has its own pollution problems too. We need to do a lot of conservation, conserve energy. Big, and that's real hard to go backwards.
Big political issues and economic issues. And again, Amy here talking about small things that we can all do. And you, as you talk about conservation efforts.
And the state has a energy efficiency plan. I don't think that's what it's called, a climate plan of some sort. And part of that, and a significant part, is energy efficiency. And that is, I think, the most valid way to reduce our energy consumption in the near term, which is insulate your houses, seal your houses, build to a higher standard, or build to a standard, an Energy Star or something like that. And so we have, Bluegrass GreenSource has audit kits that you can check out, but there's also online tools you can do walkthroughs of your house and that kind of thing.
And Dr. Hansen and other environmental leaders in the country have made it real clear that one of the best things we can do for climate change is to plant trees and preserve trees. Trees are something that we have not recognized. We take them for granted, especially in Kentucky, where
they're like the lungs of the earth.
Absolutely. Let's go back to the phones and talk to listeners. Let's talk to Ed from Lexington, who's been on the line for a little bit here. Thanks for being patient with us, Ed. You're on the air. Are you there, Ed?
Yes, I am. Sorry. In regards to the littering, one of the biggest culprits, it seems, is the local governments. This has happened several times that I've seen. In fact, I was involved back in November and helped cleaning up a stream down Richmond Road across from Idolize Shopping Center. It wasn't but 2 weeks after that I was coming off New Circle Road, heading down Richmond Road, and I saw a city, I guess it was Herbie, and papers and everything else had blown out of the back of it, and that must have gone on for two or three blocks. Finally, I called him at the stoplight and notified him about that. I don't know if he did anything. I turned off at that point. But I've seen this several times. I don't think local government is really doing enough to monitor their own capabilities or their own littering. So I think that there ought to be something done to make them more conscientious that their Herbies and so on are contributing to the litter.
I'm not sure what a Herbie is. What is a Herbie?
I think that he's talking about the trucks.
Herbie is your before you put your trash in to be recycled.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then taken out to the landfill and so on. Lenny is really the recycle. Mm. Herbie is just taken out to the landfill. But, and this may have been Lenny because it was papers, a lot of papers and wrappers and things like that were flying out of the back of the truck. And it was the city recycling truck.
Well, I'd like to say thank you for helping clean up that stream. I think I was there when they've been two cleanups, and I was one of those days, so I appreciate your help with that. I can't speak for the city by any means, but I do know that we work with the city a lot, and they are very receptive, and I think that if you called the city's phone number, which is 311, and sort of reported it, I think it's something that can be drawn to their attention. I do know that litter coming from truck beds generally is a big source of the litter, and sometimes people think of it as just, it goes away, right? So you go to your fast food, you put it in the bed of your truck, and then you park at your house, and it's gone, and so the litter fairy took it, I think.
All right, Ed.
Yes.
Ed, you raised some good points, and we need to move on because we're running out of time here. Thanks so much for being part of our show. Let's talk to Jane from Frankfurt. Jane, you are on the air. Go right ahead.
Hi there. I'm trying to open the door here. We have somebody at the door.
Sorry about that.
Hang on.
Okay.
Hang on. Can you take somebody else and let me deal with this person at the door?
Sure. Jane, we'll bring your microphone down. We'll come back to you in a couple of moments because Karen from Richmond left us a message, didn't stay on the line. She wants to urge people to use canvas shopping bags instead of plastic bags, to not use fertilizer on their lawns, and to let their grass grow longer. Now, why let the grass grow longer? What difference does that make if I go out and mow my lawn to make it look nice and pretty and green?
If you have taller grass, you have healthier grass. If you have healthier grass, you have less weeds. So the taller your grass is, the longer the roots go, the less you have to water, if you water at all. And I'd like to add to Karen that not using fertilizer is very green, but using fertilizer appropriately, for example, not right before a rain, is another way to use. You can still have your greener lawn and not have as much of an impact.
Okay. And yes, Hugh.
Again, pre-settlement, we had 2 to 3 million acres of prairies with native grasses. When you say grass today, you're talking about fescue 99% of the time, which is not produced food for the birds. And a lot of our mowing habits, even taking hay, are done on a commercial decision, not on a bird decision. So you end up mowing when the birds are trying to nest early in spring. You end up not. So we're promoting a lot at the natural area level, strip mowing, different techniques, mowing from the inside out so that the smaller animals and things can escape the bush hogs. There are a lot of tools, but primarily our native grasses are few and far between. They're in the rocky outcrop areas, and it's a real important conservation issue in Kentucky.
Jane, I'm sorry, but we are really running out of time, and we actually, Karen's comment about the lawn services and about fertilizer and so forth, I think addressed the issue you were going to bring up with us, but we need to wrap up because I need to ask each of our guests, as we have 2 minutes remaining in our program here. First, let's start with Amy. What tips would you offer for how to observe Earth Day this year?
Well, if you can get out and participate in our cleanup in one of the cities, that would be lovely. If you can't, think about packing a waste-free lunch. This is something that you don't buy individual packages of chips, but instead buy a big bag, bring a little container with you, pack your kids' lunch in a waste-free way. That's one easy way that you can celebrate on Tuesday.
Okay, a couple more really good tips from Amy Soner of Bluegrass Green Source. Let's come back to Jim Embry, Sustainable Communities Network. Your tips for Earth Day.
Of course, plant a garden. If you have children, get them outside. Plant some veggies, some broccoli, some tomatoes. Plant a fruit tree, plant berries. Create your own backyard or your own in your apartment compost bin, and just recognize that we're all part of this wonderful earth.
All right, Jim Embry, thank you so much. Hugh and Mark are here from the Kentucky Natural Lands Trust. Go out and preserve some land for Earth Day?
Plant trees and preserve trees if you want to balance the changes we're having to face in the near future. But we've got 85,000 miles of roads, too, so I think we need to work with the Department of Transportation so they don't overly mow and poison all the right-of-ways. We have a lot of hikes Two Pine Mountain and our other major project connecting Bernheim over to Fort Knox. Check our web page out. We'll get you out in the woods.
What is your web address?
KNLT.org.
KNLT.org. Pine Mountain Wildlife Corridor. You got me excited about that. I'm going to go down with our engineer one of these days and check out our transmitter down in that region. Amy Soner, we had with us Hugh Archer as well as Mark Evans and Jim Embry. Thank you all for
being here.
Thank you.
Happy,
thank you.
Lovely.
Happy
great
Earth
to
Day.
Be here.
And we want to thank our crew for putting today's show together. Our associate producers are Logan Riley, Richard Turner, and Andrew Moorhead, and Richard put together a show to put today's show together. And thanks for a great job with that, Richard. On the phones, we have Julie Tennell, although I think Logan was helping out as well. And at the controls, as usual, our technical director, Jonice Franklin. You'll find this program on our website. You can listen to it directly from the website or download it as a podcast. I think that's the environmentally wise way to do it. Download the audio from WEKU.FM. And please don't forget to follow us on Twitter at WEKUEST and join us again next week for Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations.